Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley, and I am really excited for my episode today. We have a licensed clinical psychologist on the episode, and we are going to talk all about trauma and releasing trauma and thought patterns, and you know how it goes. Wherever the conversation goes is where we end up. So sometimes I make these introductions and we end up in a completely different place, and it's better than we could have imagined. First, a couple of quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You will find a link for my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by John Gray, Anita Morjani, Michael Beckwith, Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, you know, those last three who were on The Secret. You'll also find ways to sponsor the podcast. You will find ways to connect on social media. You'll find links to my courses, coaching, free downloads, and ways to connect with my amazing guest as well. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. So speaking of my amazing guest, let's get her introduced. So with me today, I have Dr. Sharzad Jalali. She is a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in psychoanalysis, trauma resolution, and relational dynamics. With a comprehensive approach that integrates depth-oriented psychological techniques, existential meaning-making frameworks, and body-based somatic interventions, Dr. Jalali empowers individuals to transcend emotional challenges by aligning their inner beliefs and emotional patterns with their broader life aspirations. Her work moves beyond traditional cognitive methods, emphasizing both the restructuring of thought patterns and the engagement of the body, where trauma is often stored, to achieve a more holistic and profound healing process. So much of that I talk about in my own book, and I'm so excited to get a professional's take on it all. So welcome, Dr. Sharzad. What do I call you? What do you prefer?
Usually my clients go by my last name just because I feel like it's an easier name to pronounce, but I don't have a preference. Whatever comes to you more naturally.
Okay, Dr. Jalali. I mean, it is a fun name to say. I'm not going to lie. It's fun. It like rolls off the tongue. Well, I'm so glad you're here with me. So I always start all of my episodes the same way, and that is by asking my guest, what is their origin story? So what is it that made you want to be a clinical psychologist who specializes in all of these areas?
Well, I want to say hello to all your listeners and extend my gratitude to you for having me here. To tell you the truth, I think most of us who work in this field can't really claim that we stepped into it very consciously. I think most of us end up here through some kind of for lack of a better word, divine intervention or unconscious kind of, you know, bringing us into this field of work. I myself fall into the same category. I almost finished a PhD in linguistics, which was what I originally studied. And I was in my late 20s at that time, and I think I went through what we refer to in the psychological domains as a midlife crisis. I was trying to figure out, you know, what the purpose is and why we're all here, and had a lot of unanswered questions. So I started working with a Jungian analyst who kind of walked me through this inner journey that kind of changed my perspective towards everything. In fact, it made me kind of stop what I was doing, which was at the tail end of my doctorate, and relocate and go back to school again and start this field. And ever since, I've never looked back because I really feel like this is where I belong. So I can't take credit for finding psychology. I would say psychology mainly found me.
So what was it that, what was that inner journey about that made you totally pivot and change your life direction?
You know what? I would have to answer that this way. I've always had a very restless soul. And to some people, life comes very naturally. Like they know exactly where they are, where they belong, where they're headed. They know exactly what they want. My soul has always been in conflict with itself. It's as if the things I wanted contradicted each other. I wasn't sure at one point. And all I know is there was always a lot of inner noise. And somehow I wanted to bring some meaning to all of that, or maybe find a way to calm it down. And I think that's what initiated it all.
So why trauma? So like the reason I'm kind of digging is pretty much every guest I've had on the show, you know, I have a lot of coaches, I have a lot of healers, I have a lot of people who are out there serving humanity in some kind of way. And like I said, I ask everyone that origin story, and pretty much everyone tells a story of going through trauma and overcoming it and wanting to give back and help people so that they don't have to suffer like they did. And that's my own story as well. You know, I went through a lot of trauma when I was younger. So I'm wondering, like, did you go through trauma yourself? And that's what led you to want to become a therapist focused on that?
You know, I don't think there's a human being that can claim they've gotten through life without some form of trauma.
Sure.
I think when people hear that word, they have different reactions to it, because from a psychological perspective, obviously trauma is anything that disrupts your life, right? But your average person usually has a more, I want to say maybe tougher definition of trauma, like something out of the ordinary must have happened to you. If we're referring to trauma in the sense that has my life been a journey, a difficult journey, I would say definitely. Obviously, at times more difficult than others. In fact, I recently wrote a book that is in the process of being published, which is the main theme of the book is rooted in a traumatic event that has happened to me and how I've come to cope with it. So I agree that this is something that usually leads people towards this field of work. But I have to admit, my own trauma, even though inspiring, I don't think is what brought me here, because in no shape or form do I feel like this has made me more capable in dealing with other people's trauma. If anything, I think what it has taught me is you don't have to define yourself through whatever it is that has happened to you. So I think the message I wanted to get across to other people was these are simply things that happen to us and they're inevitable. Sometimes they're accidents, sometimes, you know, we're in the wrong place, wrong time. For every person, it's different. Sometimes it's not even our own actions. It's what has happened before we even came to the world, right? So depending on where we're born, to what parents, what conditions, none of us can escape it, but what we can do is narrate our life going forward with our strengths and don't define ourselves by whatever it is that has happened to us.
I think that's really well said, because so often people get so wrapped up in their story, right? And you even use the word narration. And it's funny, like I talk about a lot of this in my own book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, but more from like the coaching and spiritual perspective, but it's kind of two sides of the same coin, that we get so, people can get so wrapped up in their story that it becomes their identity, right? And then they define themselves by their illness or by the things that have happened to them or by mistakes they might have made. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like you end up getting more of that, and you, when you really believe it, and you end up just staying that character throughout the rest of your life. So how does someone change their narration? How does someone change their story?
You know, you said that really well. I'm very glad you brought that up, because I feel like whatever story we tell ourselves, after a while we believe it. It becomes very difficult to have any other belief system than that. But the way we start is noticing this is something that has happened to us, but it's not us in our entirety, right? Mm-hmm. When we go through something, like let's say in Jungian kind of perspective, we have this complex referred to as the orphan complex. So you can kind of explain it this way, that let's say a person loses a main parental figure at a young age. They suffer from noticing that they often identify themselves in many ways as an orphan going through life. Like life is rejecting them, people are rejecting them because they're a main parental figure at one point has left. And this becomes their identity after a while. They can't sidestep it. They can't bypass it. So whatever situation, dynamic that they go through in life, they kind of define it through this personal belief system about themselves. And when we work with them from a Jungian perspective, we get them to see, this is not me, this is my complex speaking. Those are the verbiage that we use in Jungian therapy, that this is not necessarily me being rejected, but this is that hurt part of me as a child believing that I'm being rejected over and over. And for good reason, because when it didn't have a lot of resources, it went through something very traumatic that it had to cope with, and this was the best way it could cope with it. But now as an adult, I can look at this from different domains and perspectives and find resources to deal with it. So even though I may have felt rejected, what can I do? Can I communicate with someone? Can I reestablish myself somehow? Or do I have to stay victim to this rejection? I think what we want to re-narrate essentially is, no, you don't. And at any given point, you have a lot of power that you can tap into and essentially face whatever negative emotional domain you feel stuck in.
Yeah, totally. And I guess to get to that point, someone needs to be aware of their patterns, right? It seems like so many people are going around just kind of like unconscious, like not aware of these patterns that are driving them. And like, for example, like there's a couple of people I know in my life that like bad things always seem to happen to, and like bad things, like seriously bad things. But those are the same people who will say things like, this always happens to me, or they're just always kind of complaining about something. And it's like, from an outside perspective, you kind of want to just take them by the shoulders and be like, listen to yourself, right? But like, when people aren't aware, like, I mean, I guess that's kind of a psychologist's job to like point it out to them. But if someone's listening and they're struggling with things, like how does someone become aware of their own pattern?
You know what? I think a great place to start is whatever it is that bothers you. So let's say, I'm going to use your example. I feel like I'm that person that bad things happen to me all the time, right? And that is the thing that is my problem at the moment. That's the thing that brings me a lot of emotional pain. I start challenging that, right? I say, am I the person that bad things always happen to? Or could it be that I am continuously in this state of mind? And it's impossible to sidestep that frequency when I'm constantly waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? So my nervous system is escalated. I'm continuously in survival mode. And all those things together keep me in this state. So what has to happen is I have to identify what that dynamic is that's causing me emotional pain. From a cognitive perspective, I have to start questioning it and seeing where that takes me and if there are other alternatives. From a sensational perspective, which is how we house that belief in our body, I have to obviously de-escalate my nervous system from that reaction. And from an emotional perspective, I have to come to see how my emotions around this belief system change when my belief changes, essentially. So if I feel like, yes, maybe a few bad things have happened to me, but that doesn't mean I have to go through the rest of my life having to deal with bad things. Immediately, even with that reframe, which is very simple and it's not very deep, my emotional response to the situation changes. It goes from hopeless to hopeful.
Yeah, I like that. And I like that you talked so much about the nervous system, because and one of the things I want to ask you too, like you talk in your bio about how the body stores trauma. And like, you know, we've all read that book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is phenomenal. How does that work? Do you think that our body's stored emotions can create illness, can manifest bad things? Can, like, is it the law of attraction? Is it the reticular activation system like Tony Robbins talks about? Is it just that your nervous system thinks you're reliving that moment over and over when you're thinking about it? Like, what's the science behind it, according to psychologists?
So what happens when we go through a piece of trauma is we have a bodily reaction to that. I mean, all of us can relate to this. You're driving on the freeway, the person in front of you hits the brakes all of a sudden, and you have a mere accident. You're about to hit them. And you know that sensation that you feel like your heart all of a sudden drops, and for a few seconds, your hands are very shaky. You feel like you can't drive well. You know, we gradually gain control over the situation again. So anything that happens to us has a sensational response in our body. When we first started to work with trauma, it was the help that we were providing the veterans. And what we realized was they would come do talk therapy and they would talk about a piece of trauma that was bothersome to them. And they would continue for months or years and not much would happen. They would continuously, actually, to tell you the truth, be re-traumatizing themselves. Because when you talk about a piece of trauma in an escalated state of body and mind, all that does is re-traumatize you. Eventually, we got to the notion that the only way they can actually process this is to relive that moment without the escalation of the nervous system. Why? Because they have survived it, so they're okay at the moment. So they did this through different modalities. Either sometimes they would administer some medications that would calm them down while they talked about the piece of trauma. So their brain would relearn that I can have a different reaction, visceral reaction to this phenomena that I've come to house this way. right? Which would have been de-escalating. Now, the more recent methods are what we call bottom-up techniques in therapy, which are mainly, instead of using the mind to get to the body, we use the body to get to the mind. Why do we do this? Because it's more accessible. So when someone's talking about a piece of trauma or something negative, we encourage them to bring awareness to what's happening in the body. Where are they housing this emotion? How are they housing it? Is it, you know, an aroused heartbeat? Is it that they feel heavy in a particular body part as they talk about it? And then we encourage them to find more comfort with that sensation. And we don't let them finish talking about that piece unless they've reached that de-escalated state in the body. Once they can do that, their association to that piece of information changes.
Wow. It's pretty amazing that just by, like, I don't know if like relaxing your body is the right word, but like noticing where it is in your body and changing that, you can change your perspective around something that happened to you. I've had experience with EMDR. I went through, you know, something traumatic a few years ago and worked with a therapist in that, and that was incredible. It kind of did the same thing, right? She was like, where is it in your body? And then it was Zoom, so we did like tapping on it instead of like the eye movement. Is that one of those bottom-up techniques?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So in EMDR, what happens is you're getting, usually when we're in a traumatic space, we get stuck in it. So we have two hemispheres in our brain that don't necessarily communicate well when we're in fear or distress. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to get the brain to start communicating well, to have that bilateral movement. So the movements they use in EMDR, whether it's tapping or eye movement, essentially what you're doing is you're increasing that bilateral stimulation that allows you to process a piece of trauma by kind of using both hemispheres and getting it flowing or moving and making it unstuck from how you're relating to it.
Wow, that's so fascinating. I didn't realize that's what was happening. That's pretty incredible that they figured out that you can do that. Right. So I know you work with other somatic modalities. Like, what have you seen work the best on your patients?
You know, I am trained in EMDR, brain spotting, and somatic experiencing, and I tend to meet with the patient and figure out which one resonates with them best and kind of take them down that process. But I have to admit, my personal favorite and the most comprehensive one, in my opinion, is Peter Levine's work, somatic experiencing, where you kind of generally bring the person's attention to whatever it is that's happening in their body and teach them the alphabet of somatic work so they can do this on their own to learn how to identify distress in their body and tend to it on a regular basis so the body never goes above its, I mean, we can't say never goes, but we minimize the extent that the body goes above its state of essentially healthy arousal.
Do all of these kind of bottom up techniques really work to like clear it all out? Or is there, like, I understand that it like de-escalates your body, so you're not having that reaction, but like, I'm just like thinking out loud, like in my case with past traumas I've gone through and what I write about in my book is like really like gaining knowledge helped me a lot to shift things and see them from another perspective. And so like, is there any kind of like learning that goes hand in hand, or can you completely like undo someone's traumatic response just by working with the body?
That's a great question. My personal belief, and you're going to talk to experts that tell you differently. Mm-hmm. As a patient and as a psychologist, as someone who's gone through trauma and done trauma work, mm-hmm. I feel like once, you know that saying that once you know something, you can never unknow it? Mm-hmm. I think once you've gone through a traumatic experience, there will never come a time that you have zero activation towards that, nor should you, because that's part of your wisdom at that moment. What we want to lessen is simply your reactivity to it, but that will never become neutral for you. Like if you lost a loved one, it's kind of saying, will there ever come a time that I don't care at all that I lost this person? No, you just learn how to live with the loss, right? You become bigger than the problem.
I like that. Right. You become bigger than the problem.
And that's where healing is. But different experts have different belief systems in this regard. There's this phrase that, for example, they use in brain spotting. They call it squeeze the lemon. So kind of when you're working on a piece of trauma, they really get you to get out anything, any escalation that you're feeling around it. I don't think it doesn't happen in the moment. I think it does. But I think these patterns in our thought process or emotional process are so complicated, and there's so many different thought patterns that you never completely undo something traumatic that has happened to you. You just kind of become stronger. You gain wisdom, and it doesn't just happen through body work. I think it's a combination of talking about it, changing your perspective, gaining knowledge, noticing your strengths, having a good support system. I don't think there is one thing that fixes things in its entirety.
I like that. It's like the more holistic approach. And I would like to add, like, I think that not only de-escalating and not having a reaction is a goal, but also you have better tools for the next time and you have more resilience for the next time, right? Because just because you're healed from something doesn't mean like life stops happening, right? There's like always going to be challenge and adversity. You mentioned brain spotting. I actually don't know what that is. Would you mind just kind of explaining what that is?
Yes, brain spotting is also a bottom-up technique that they use a pointer to kind of, again, the same concept of, focusing on the sensational component of a traumatic event. And then they use a pointer to turn your gaze to different places to allow you to process the trauma. I want to say the more I've received training in all of these modalities, I feel like they're more similar than different. Mm-hmm. I just feel like the founders of each have had different perspectives into, you know, working with the body to impact your thought process.
Yeah, totally. So there's a couple of like key things in your, I just love that bio of yours that I read because I was like, oh, wow, that's fascinating. That's cool. Yes, yes. So one of the things that you wrote in there is you have a comprehensive approach that includes existential meaning-making frameworks. And I'd love to kind of dive into that for a second. First of all, like, what do you mean by that? Like, I think I know what you mean, but I want to hear it from you.
We use this word a lot in therapy, and I'm sure you're very familiar with the disconnect, right? A lot of the patients that come to us, I would say at the root of their emotional crisis is what we refer to as disconnect, whether disconnect with themselves, others, or the world, essentially. In fact, it's what's rooted in the mood disorders like anxiety, depression, and so much more. So what is disconnect? Disconnect is essentially in its nature, it's not a negative thing. I mean, we all do it all the time ever since we were kids and we go to school and, you know, we're looking at the teacher teach a topic and then we get bored and we start daydreaming, right? That's a form of disconnect. Or we're going through something and once it becomes too much information or, we get overwhelmed by it, we kind of just disconnect and take a moment and go inward and explore something else within ourselves. So disconnect by nature isn't a bad thing. But as we go through life, because being an adult is super difficult and because it's just too overwhelming all the time, sometimes our main way of dealing with our lives is to go into disconnect. When we do this, in essence, what it is a form of numbness where we don't feel our emotions the way we should. So either they're too much and we override them and pretend like they're not there, or we distract ourselves from them, or we get consumed by them in a way that we no longer exist as we should. Regardless of how we're going about it, it causes us to lose meaning. And connection in its essence, it's meaning making. Mm-hmm. So when I connect with you and I notice that I enjoy talking to you, or I care for you, or I'm learning something from you, there is meaning in that. Now, the moment I don't pay attention to any of those things, I go into disconnect with you. But the most important thing about meaning making in life is the connection to the self. It's impossible to be connected to yourself and be in a deep depression, for example. In fact, the word depression comes from deep rest. It's as if I'm so overwhelmed that I'm now going to go into this deep rest of disconnect.
That makes sense. So when you say like existential meaning making frameworks, it means, well, the existential in there, like to me, that's like someone's making meaning out of a meaning that's like maybe not there. Is that, or am I reading into it incorrectly?
Well, I think the existential meaning making mainly goes to Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, and that's where that terminology comes from. But what it has to do with is the whole process of life for all of us, if you think about it, at one point becomes very meaningless and nihilistic. I mean, even if we do everything right and nothing bad happens to us throughout this lifetime, which is absolutely impossible, we have to leave at one point. I mean, we have to leave everyone, everything, and go somewhere that no one really knows where. I mean, some people have certain beliefs depending on their religious background, but the truth of the matter is no one has ever come back to tell us this is what happens after you die, right? So that whole notion, that existential crisis is something that all humans deal with. Some of us are more aware of it than others, but I think it's something that at one point in life definitely hits us. That what's the whole point of this? Mm. What's the meaning behind my life, my suffering? Why did I have to go through this? And that's where that meaning making comes into play.
So when you help people with that approach, like what does that look like?
Well, it starts with the population that we kind of treat in my line of work at this point are usually highly functional people who suffer from some form of neurosis. So something brings them into therapy, whether it's, I have everything I want in my life, but I still don't feel happy. Or I've accomplished everything I thought I would, but what was the point of it all, right? And now this is causing symptoms like whether it's, let's say, severe anxiety. Now, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to talk to anyone. I get super anxious socially because I'm losing the meaning behind what all of this means for me and what my role is and the way I relate to myself. So through, I guess, creating associations and asking questions, delving into people's fantasies, their dreams, because the language of the dream and fantasies is what helps us get into the unconscious and figure out, you know, those unresolved issues that are presenting themselves as these symptoms. So it's a lot of exploration to give you a quick answer.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it kind of leads me to the next thing I was going to ask about, just to pull a line out of your bio. You align inner beliefs and emotional patterns with their broader life aspirations. And I love that so much because it seems like so often people will have like this big dream or this big goal, but then their daily habits don't line up with that, right? Or they're like so fearful to get started that they just like get paralyzed, or they have this belief that like, I'm not good enough for that. I'm not worthy of that. There's no way I could do that. Other people are doing that. Why should I? So I love the idea that you're like helping people align all of that. So like, how do you help align someone's inner belief and emotional pattern with these big dreams that they have?
Mainly what I do is I identify what's standing in their way. So let's say you say, I want to be very successful, whatever success means to you. And I say, well, what's keeping you? And you're like, well, I'm not really good at anything. So how can I become successful? So right now, this fact that I'm not really good at anything is your belief system. And if I can get to the root of that, which is probably rooted somewhere in your childhood where you kind of internalize this message, right? I can re-narrate this. And by bypassing this belief system that you adapted, you can kind of reframe it into something that helps you reach that success that you have defined. Beliefs are extremely important in who we become. Let me give you a little bit of a story about myself. When I was young, my family migrated from Iran to the United States. And obviously, my first name is very difficult, Scheherazade. And I went to school and the kids were making fun of me. So I came back home one day crying to my father. And I'm like, why did you name me this? It's such a difficult name. No one can say it. Why couldn't you just give me a normal name? And he said, well, do you know why I named you Scheherazade? And I said, no. He said, well, it goes back to the 1001 Nights story. There was a king whose wife had betrayed him, and he hated women, so he would ask for a different woman every night, and he would behead them afterwards. And one night, he asked for the prime minister's daughter, whose name was Scheherazade, and the prime minister found out that he's asking for her daughter. He got scared. He ran into her, and he said, you need to flee. If he, you know, kind of gets you, he's going to kill you. And she told him, no, I think I can calm him down and kind of, you know, work through this. So she goes to see the king and she starts telling him a story. And the story was so fascinating that it lasts 1001 nights. And by the end of the story, the king falls in love with her, marries her, and forgives all, you know, women, and obviously the whole storyline of living happily ever after. And I said, well, what does that have to do with me? Why did you name me after her? And he said, because I want you to learn how to find solutions to the problems life throws at you.
Wow.
And till this day, I was very young when he told me that story. Every time I get stuck somewhere, I say, wait a second, I am very good at finding solutions to problems. And that may not even be true, but it's true for me. Therefore, it helps me get through something. Do you see how powerful the notion of a belief is?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I've heard that like our beliefs come from, well, a lot of them come from before we were age 7, right? Because we're kind of in a theta brainwave state before that, right? Like we're like hypnosis. So it's like the opinions of the adults you grew up around, like other people's like societal conditioning, the kids who made fun of you. So one thing I love Ed Milet, I don't know if you know who he is. He's big into personal development, but he does this thing with his kids every night. He's like, let me tell you about you. You are strong. You are brave. You are kind. You are patient. You are beautiful. And he does it every night. And like, that's what my son's turning a year in like less than a week, but like, I'm like, that's what I'm going to do to my kid like every day, because that forms your belief system, like your inner voice. Right. And yeah, you're nodding.
No, absolutely. I think it's very powerful. I'm glad that you've adapted that strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so important. I want to, you mentioned like way earlier in the conversation, like you don't have to become this victim that like you don't have to like the bad things that happen to you don't have to become your identity, and you don't have to become a victim. And it seems like in society, in the US right now anyway, society tends to reward victims, like especially on social media. You know, when you play the victim, you get to not step into your power, right? You get to place blame on other people and outside of events for your suffering. You get to be the martyr. You get pity. You get to get out of things that you don't want to do. So I'd just love to hear your thoughts on all of that. I don't know if there's a specific question, but just like your thoughts on it in general.
Let me respond to it this way.
Yeah.
At the root of emotional maturity, is taking emotional responsibility.
Beautiful.
So every time we avoid responsibility, we are going into the most primitive manner of functioning, which is, it is not my fault that I feel this way.
Mm.
The truth of the matter is, we live in a world that bad things happen to good people all the time. It's not about avoiding that. It's about, what do I do with this? Because I'm a very powerful being that can regain control of my existence, no matter what has happened to me.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I couldn't agree more. Like, there's that line, like, you're not responsible for the things that happen to you, but you're responsible for your own healing. And yeah, I love your outlook on all of this, because I said, it's so similar to mine. You just have the more scientific background to, like, to kind of frame it in that. And I love that you're just all about, like, restructuring your thought patterns and, like, figuring out where this is stored in the body and releasing it and taking responsibility, because that's so empowering. Like you said, you are powerful, and you just give that power away when you don't take that responsibility.
The bad thing about that is, you can give power away in one part of your life and regain it in somewhere else, because that becomes your identity. So it's a very dangerous game to play, for whatever gain, even if you're doing it. You have to remind yourself, at what expense am I willing to be the victim of this situation?
Will you elaborate on that a little more? You're giving power away in one area, but you're gaining power in another. What do you, like, where...
You're not gaining power.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
Losing power everywhere, because it's impossible for me to feel like I'm powerless, but then feel powerful everywhere else, right?
Got it.
I always tell people, you are this person that this has happened to. You're not this event.
Yeah.
Right? And that by itself helps you just step out of that situation. Sometimes we over-identify with the negative things that happen to us. It becomes our personality. It becomes who we are. But no event in this life is bigger than you in your entirety, because we are such comprehensive, powerful beings.
I love that so much. And, I've mentioned, I went through something that was really hard in 2020. I was a victim of cancel culture and a whole community, but it was like a community I was a part of in real life, not just like, just attacked me online. And what you just said, I went to 3 different therapists and, like, heard that over and over again. And it was like, you also can't be, what was that, like, really specific thing they said? Like, other people's, like, this says more about other people than it does about you. Like, other people's actions about this says more about who they are than who you are. And exactly what you said is, like, what got me through this. Like, because I was like, oh my God, am I a bad person? Like, all these people are saying it. It must be true. You know, it's so easy to feel that way. So I appreciate what you just said. And if you're listening right now, like, go rewind and, like, listen again and, like, write it on a sticky note and put it on your mirror, because I think it's so easy to fall into that trap.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. I'm sorry you had that experience. I can imagine how tough that must have been for you. I can tell you this much. Every time we go through something devastating, within that, there is potential for so much growth.
Yeah.
Once we go through the initial grief, if we can connect to that potential, we usually come out of it a lot stronger than we were before. I don't believe there's any event in this life that's purely bad or purely good. There's a little bit of bad in every good and a little bit of good in every bad. So if you're out there and if you're listening and you're going through something tough, look for the gold in your negative experience, because I assure you it's there, even though you may not be able to connect to it right now.
Absolutely. It's like a hidden Easter egg, right? And then once you find it, you get leveling up, you get growth, you get lessons, you get tools, you get all the things. Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I just appreciate you so much. It's been almost an hour. It's flown by. I just love your perspective. You're so calming, by the way, to talk to. Like, I love your voice.
Since my inner turmoil is always escalated. So.
No, you're very calming. You're very soothing. And I'm sure people want to know where they can find you, where they can connect with you. I know you have a new book coming out. So if you want to just take a moment and share that.
I've sent the links to my social media to you, so I would appreciate it if you could share it with your listeners. The new book is scheduled to come out sometime in July. It's called From Pain to Purpose. Mm. And it has a very interesting kind of component to it, in the sense that it's based on a fictional character. And I talk about this person's psychological ups and downs. And at the end of each chapter, I stop and I explain the psychology behind it and how to overcome that pattern. It's kind of rooted in my own personal trauma, as well as an amalgamation of my clinical work over the years. And I've tried to target as much as I can the emotional distress that your average person has to deal with, and how to use that to what we were discussing actually a little bit earlier, grow out of it instead of getting consumed by it. Emotional pain is inevitable in this lifetime. There is no way that you can ever get to a point where you don't feel any kind of it. I think as a society, we have to endorse learning to live with it more than quieting it down, which is what we tend to do in the Western world through some means or other.
Sounds like a really cool book. I've never heard of a book that did that before. It sounds really unique. So I'm excited to pick up a copy myself. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. I appreciated your perspective, appreciated you taking the time. If you're listening, send this to someone you think might need it. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the things. Let's help lift humanity up in consciousness. All right. Have a beautiful rest of your day, everyone. I will see you next time.